You're listening to the Uncharted Podcast. This week's guest is Jack Klingbeil, where we talk about how he's reinvented his career a couple of times and transitioned into tech startups. We also talk about what's working when it comes to business development and generating new pipeline for your company. I hope you enjoy this week's episode after a quick advertisement by our sponsor, NetSuite.
Best thing about a business is as it scales, you start being buried in manual work. At some point, cracks start to emerge. If this is you, you should know these three numbers. 37,000, 25, 1. 37,000, that's the number of businesses which have upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. 25, NetSuite turns 25 this year. That's 25 years of helping businesses do more with less, close their books in days, not weeks, and drive down costs. One, because your business is one of a kind, so you get a customized solution for all your KPIs. That is key performance indicators in one efficient system with one source of truth. Manage risk, get reliable forecasts, and improve margins. Everything you need to grow, all in one place. That is exactly what I've done time after time for our businesses and when we were scaling at AutoMile. Right now, download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist designed to give you consistently excellent performance absolutely for free at netsuite.com/scale. That is netsuite.com/scale to get your own KPI checklist at netsuite.com/scale.
This is Poya. I have Jack Klingbeil joining us. Jack, welcome to the Uncharted Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Poya.
Excited to have you. Jack, give everybody a little bit of context on who you are, both the personal business side, as well as maybe throw in an interesting fact that even folks that do know you may not know about you.
Sure. Okay. Let's see. I guess we can just start with my background, who I am, where I'm from, all that fun stuff. So I actually am from a podunk town in Michigan. It's called Grand Ledge, Michigan. Grew up playing sports, ice hockey specifically. Went on and played a couple of years of college hockey and actually transitioned into like what most D3 washed up college athletes do, transitioned to CrossFit. And I competed at CrossFit and at a high level and coached CrossFit for a number of years. Those are also my hobbies today. I still do CrossFit and weightlifting, anything outdoorsy. I live in Denver, Colorado now, so I moved to the mecca of snow sports and mountain biking and all that fun stuff. I'm a really active person. Recently engaged to a beautiful woman named Julie. Super excited about that. Currently trying to juggle career stuff, a high velocity startup, and plan a wedding in the least stressful way possible. Fun fact about me. I think my guilty pleasure, I listen to a lot of dad rock, and I think a lot of people peg me. If you don't know me and don't see what I look like as a person, I'm kind of this burly guy with a bunch of tattoos, so they usually peg me as like a hard rock heavy metal sort of guy, but I actually like yacht rock more than anything. That's me in a nutshell.
I love it. If someone's looking to make a career transition, whether it's into tech or something else, what have you found to be like successful as you go through that transition, but more importantly kind of reinventing yourself?
There's a lot to unpack there. I think first and foremost, a lesson for anybody out there is like your network is definitely your net worth. And I was fortunate enough when I learned about SaaS and software in general, I was a CrossFit coach and I was training all of these, you know, CrossFit gyms in general are a little bit more boutique depending on what area and what gym you go to. And I was just a college kid. I was working at Enterprise Rent-A-Car. That was like my first job out of school and I coached at night and would coach Saturday mornings and things like that. But I would meet a lot of people that were middle-aged and very successful. And just by getting to know these people, I learned what they did and they sold software. So it was like kind of in the back of my head really early on is like, I want to make great money. I want to be challenged. I want to be surrounded by people with humongous brains that are better than me. And technology seemed like the environment that I was most attracted to. First and foremost, whatever job I had the opportunity to go out and complete, I put my best foot forward, tried to master the role that I was hired to do. Once I felt like I mastered what I was doing, I'm very future oriented. What's going to ultimately get me to where I want to go, which was software. I transitioned to technical staffing and recruiting, kind of learned how to speak technology a bit with executives, and then did that well. Earned an opportunity to interview for a BDR job at a high growth startup called Duo Security. And really that was like the launch pad for me. Fortunately, Duo was in a really great position. I actually got bought by Cisco for a couple billion dollars the year I was there. And that truthfully set me up for more BDR jobs where I got to take full advantage of coming in with that mindset and attitude. I think a combination of that mixed in with a right place, right time, and a really great boss, like, allowed me to take advantage of the situation and move up the ranks.
One of the things you just mentioned, which is you got better at being able to talk to executives or like being able to chat with them. What have you learned to like up level someone that maybe is out of college in an entry level role to be able to talk and have that business acumen? Because it makes a huge difference.
It takes repetition and it takes a lot of failure. Like, you have to get in those conversations and maybe fall on your face a couple of times. I certainly did, using my BDRs as an example that I manage and have managed a couple of different companies now. The most successful ones recognize that, oof, I didn't handle that super well. And now I'm really motivated to go learn about my prospects and the accounts I'm targeting and the people I'm going to be talking to. And really deeply and intimately understand whatever I'm selling, whether that's Cortex or Red Canary or Agent Sync or Duo, whatever. Like, I intimately understand how our product solves their business challenges and priorities that I do research on prior to reaching out to those people. You just need to intimately understand the personas you sell to, how you solve problems for them, and your ICP. And I know it's a gross oversimplification of that question, but that's the truth. It's like, you got to just like get back to basics and understand why you're calling people.
Getting back to the fundamentals, I'm fortunate to work across like three, four, five different organizations. And I would say one denominator that I'm seeing consistently is it's just gone a lot harder to generate top of level interest, call it opportunities, meetings, whatever you want to call it. It just takes a lot more effort and outside of effort. What have you found over the last couple of years, or over the last year?
A lot to unpack, but I think if I were to synthesize it down, the outbound playbook that you and I used when we were BDRs, it's not by any means dead, but like, I've seen this shift towards an outbound motion that seems to be a lot more successful than just going out cold. People do, like, we see it on LinkedIn. Like, our buyers do their research before they commit to buying something nowadays, and they have a lot more avenues to go out and acquire that information that they're looking to solve whatever problem they're trying to solve. And yeah, ABMs come to the forefront. Like, the entire go-to-market function needs to be focused on the right set of ICP fit accounts, and we need to be outbounding to them while marketing is running demand gen simultaneously. And that is 100% what's going to drive the most website visits, the most awareness of your product and brand, and better outcomes in general. The most important thing is, yeah, getting everyone aligned to a specific set of accounts and getting people to the website. I think that's how it's changed the most.
100%. How much emphasis do you put on alignment, on making sure you're serving the right set of customers? Companies, when they're young, they just try bringing on any customer, whoever they can. What ends up happening is at some point, they don't take the step back to be like, what are the common use cases? We serve better versus going after a mass market. In other words, they never make that shift of like aligning on who to double down and focus on. Have you seen that happen from your experience?
Absolutely. Really hard to do. That your success and the speed at which, like, companies that I've worked at least, like, actually getting to that place where there is an aligned, like, ideal customer profile. We understand intimately the challenges that we solve for each of these personas, and here's where we win. I think a lot of that's dependent on how quickly the company recognizes the need for, like, a really, really solid product marketing person to come in and help do that analysis while sales is brute forcing, like, their way into conversations at the very beginning of a company. I'm just speaking from my experience. I tend to join early stage and see that happen a lot, where there is that drop off, and ultimately we sign up the wrong customers and they ultimately churn. That's not good. I think a really critical step that I see a lot of companies miss is that the need to hire somebody really good in product marketing to help sales, like, focus and help go to market focus on the right sets of prospects.
It's so interesting you bring that up because I've seen this problem time after time. It's probably the most common problem where call it go to market or whoever's serving the customer or even sometimes product engineering, they're not aligned on who you double down on. There's two things I've seen for companies that like fix the problem, what they have in common. One, either a CEO, CRO, someone really high up has to own it as an initiative and make sure the company invests in it. But the second thing I've actually found is it does make a difference to
bring a third party. It could be a consulting firm. It could be, you know, an outside firm to play an objective role. I've seen people have debates and be challenged.
I think it's a totally viable option. And it's one of those things that's like so org specific.
Yeah, 100%.
Totally.
One of the questions I have, now that you're hiring and are managing and, you know, have done a good job building up team at Cortex, at least from the SDR capacity, what your top performers, whether it's at Cortex, AgentSync, what have you seen them do differently than like the rest of the pack?
The absolute best people that I've ever hired have three core qualities. They're coachable, they're super curious, and they have resiliency. Like they were just have a refuse to lose sort of mentality. It's the people that lean into that curiosity bucket a bit more, like seek to understand customer problems, seek to understand the best fit for whatever product you're pushing or selling. For those people, if you stop learning, you stop growing.
Curiosity, do you think like you can teach it, or do you think someone just has to have it?
I think you have to have it in your bones a bit, but I do think you can improve. I've seen this a bunch of times. I am probably not the most curious individual as it pertains to researching prospecting people. And I definitely wasn't when I was a BDR. I've learned that like everyone's got different styles of learning. And sometimes people just need to be aware that, hey, you're kind of weak in this area, but here's how you can go do a better job as it pertains to the role that you're in. And if you can prove to me that you can apply it, like you're and find more success, like I think you can improve it. But you have to be coachable. That's how it all kind of ties together.
And one of the fundamental things I'm seeing the top performers do is they're going back to the drawing board. They're going back to the basics. What I mean by that is, like, if things are not working, they're coming up with new ways, right, to go to market. They're coming up with new ways to, you know, improve the process. And sometimes, like, you almost have to unlearn what you've known for the last couple of years and come up with, like, I don't know, new plays. It's a really hard transition, you know, to like unlearn something that's gotten you very successful over the years to come up with new plays.
I've been challenged in that area big time in my role leading BDR. Top performers for sure, like constantly iterate. I used to be able to just like look at activity and understand, hey, activity's dipped. Like performance is also dipping. Like we need to do more. But it's not always the case these days. To your point, and I've been personally pushed to get a lot more creative with our tech stack and how we leverage tools and how we run plays.
100%. It's my slogan for the last 2 or 3 months, because I have to figure out ways to do that for different folks, is do things that are unscalable at the beginning. Write that thank you card for a customer, right? Like personalize as much as you can, because it makes a huge difference. We can probably go on and on and on this topic for like on another episode, but I really appreciate you for coming on. The one question we love to wrap up every episode with is, if you could go back to any time, what's one piece of advice you would give yourself outside of not following Detroit Lions?
That's a good one. To have a bias to act versus not do anything at all, kind of just carry over what you just said, like what we were just talking about with iterating. Action is so much better than inaction. I'd learned that sooner. I think I would have gone further quicker.
100%. In my little bubble, a lot of people have lost their swag, right? Like call it rejection, call it, it's been really hard to sell the last, you know, 12 to 18 months for some of us compared to like previous years. But like the number one way I'm seeing people get out of it is just they just go get it done, right? They don't dwell on it. They don't overthink it. So be a doer. Go be a doer, as Jack says. But Jack, thanks for coming on. Again, I appreciate you for paying it forward. For everybody listening, until next time, be safe, be well, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Best thing about a business is as it scales, you start being buried in manual work. At some point, cracks start to emerge. If this is you, you should know these three numbers. 37,000, 25, 1. 37,000, that's the number of businesses which have upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. 25, NetSuite turns 25 this year. That's 25 years of helping businesses do more with less, close their books in days, not weeks, and drive down costs. 1, because your business is one of a kind, so you get a customized solution for all your KPIs. That is key performance indicators in one efficient system with one source of truth. Manage risk, get reliable forecasts, and improve margins. Everything you need to grow, all in one place. That is exactly what I've done time after time for our businesses and when we were scaling at AutoMile. Right now, download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist designed to give you consistently excellent performance absolutely for free at netsuite.com/scale. That is netsuite.com/scale to get your own KPI checklist at netsuite.com/scale.